power button.
And we'll do it. All right. Everybody's got power on. All right. We'll call this meeting to order. So this is the CUNA Police, Impact Fee Advisory Committee meeting. It is Tuesday, September 25th. And it is almost 10 after, and we're just getting started. So I think the first thing we'll do is take roll. So, Jenna. Vonderay.
Yes.
Is present. Kelsey Holder.
Present.
Present. And Kara Madrona.
Present.
All right. So we do have a quorum. You tell how many times I've done that in my life.
Perfect. We're in this together.
At least you're not being videotaped, right?
Yes.
And it's not on, like, being broadcast to the entire neighborhood. Okay. Well, once again, I really appreciate your time. I know you are busy people. This is our second advisory committee meeting. When we met last time, we went over sort of the reason that the police department, the mayor are looking at impact fees for police, as most of the other municipalities have, in order to support the current standard level of service standard of number of officers per thousand. The city actually intends, as we discussed last time, to increase the level of service. So as far as impact fees go, we can only use impact fees to pay for keeping the level of service constant. But that at least offsets the cost that the greater population would have to spend if they were paying not only to house growth-related officers, but also additional officers that are designed to increase the level of service. So I think we talked pretty well during last meeting over the philosophy, and you do have a draft report in front of you, which I sent out in advance. The entire first seven pages is really just an overview of what we talked about last time. It talks about that philosophy, the process that I go through with the seven questions of asking who's here now, what level of service do we provide right now, and what capital inventory do we need to be able to do that. And then who's coming, how much growth are we expecting, and in order to keep that level of service consistent, what capital infrastructure will we need to do that? And then if we take that capital infrastructure, the total cost, and divide it among who's coming in terms of residential units, non-residential square footage, what would each unit have to pay their proportional share of this cost? So in section 2 on page 8, we talk about the land uses. We had a good conversation about this last time, and I got some good feedback from many of you about what we might be expecting. CUNA is one of the easier communities right now to project because everything's in the process of being permitted. Signs are up. So we have a pretty clear idea that you're going to have a significant growth over the next 10 years, upwards of 70% in population. So growing by 16,000 people approximately means another 5,000 residential units and 850,000 non-residential square feet. Now, CUNA is in an interesting place where usually a community will need to build so much housing before the non-residential follows. So 5 years from now, we will probably see a higher proportion of non-residential to residential, but it's going to lag a little bit. So for these projections, you're maybe not seeing as much as we might be projecting in other communities. So we know that in the next 10 years, the majority of your growth, 92%, is probably going to be residential, and the remaining 8% non-residential. So we know who's coming. So let's go to page 9, the impact fee calculation for the police department. Right now, the police department serves 7,500 residential units and 400,000 non-residential square feet, and they have 0.72 officers per 1,000 population. Currently, they have 2,700 square feet of a police station that supports these current officers, and it's about a little over $800,000 of eligible assets, of current assets. So if I just divide the current assets by those 7,500 homes, and 400,000 square feet. Every home's already paid a little over $100 into that police station. And every non-residential square foot is paid 5 cents. That's just for us to remember as we look at what the fees are calculated. If the fees we calculate are higher than that number, we need to go back usually and make sure that we at least can explain why. In this case, that will not happen. You'll see later that the double check looks that it's actually pretty proportionate to what you've all paid in thus far. On page 10, again, we've said that we're expecting another 5,000 residential units, 70% growth, 850,000 non-residential. And so when we talk to the chief about, all right, chief, how many more officers are you going to be hiring? Current staffing level is 17 officers. If you increase by 70%, that gives you 12 more officers. So those are our 12 growth-related officers. And then the city's also made a commitment to increase their level of service up to 1.0 officers per 1,000. So we have three different things being considered here. We have to replace the current station for the 17 bodies. And when I say officers, there's also ancillary staff that goes with them, but we just talk about the number of officers. 17 existing people need to be housed, 12 growth-related officers just to keep that 0.72 per 1,000 level of service consistent, and then another 11 officers on top of that to get it up to a better level of service. Now, this is not uncommon for more rural communities that have been served. Maybe if you're in the unincorporated area, you're receiving responses from the sheriff's department, it is not expected to have as many officers per 1,000. But as you urbanize, and with urbanization brings more crime and more complex crime and a lot of different kinds of crime, additional level of services usually. This is not uncommon to see the city getting to be this size and wanting to go up to that 1.0 officers per 1,000. So we talked to the chief about, well, what's your plan? How are you going to house all these people? And there are a couple different options. They have some options to partner with the school district. That's one of the things that we talked about last time. One of our advisory committee members, Dave Grumbeck, has given the idea that they could be leasing some space from the city. We did try to pursue that option. Dave was unable to make that meeting, and so there wasn't actually a follow-up on that. But the mayor and the chief are certainly open to those options long-term if that were to come up, if that were in the better interest of the city. But essentially what we're trying to do here today is to make sure that as your community is growing so quickly, every new house is paying in to the station that's eventually going to be needed to house those officers. So if we look at the total square footage needed of about 8,000 square feet for the entire police facility, and what I've done is divided out into the three parts, the house the people who are already here, house the people that we're hiring in order to increase the level of service, and house the people that we're hiring just to keep up with growth. So that first line is we need about 3,450 square feet for those existing 17 officers. You'll see the growth portion is zero. Impact fees don't pay for that because we're just replacing space for existing people. So that $690,000 goes over into the right-hand column. That means it needs to come from other sources, and that generally would mean property tax dollars, grants, cost sharing with the school district, for example. The second one is the increase in service level of 11 officers. Same thing, 2,250 square feet. That money can't come from impact fees. But that third line, 2,400 square feet for the 12 growth-related officers, $480,000, is 100% growth-related. We wouldn't need that square footage if we were just increasing our service level but not growing at all in the community. So you can see out of a $1.6 million capital improvement program, $486,000 of it can be recovered from impact fees from new growth. You also see that $6,000 impact fee study. The state statute allows impact fees to pay for the statutorily required preparation of these fees that we've done today. So essentially, it pays me and then pays me again in 5 years. Or someone else. Probably not me. It might be Carrie, because he is very much up on this process and he's going to be working for us. All right. So if you turn the page and we do the calculation, we take that $486,000 in capital improvement, 2,250 square feet for those growth-related officers. We know that 92% of it is being demanded by residential development and only 8% by non-residential, although we anticipate that 5 to 10 years from now that split is going to start to even out a little bit more. Then we divide it by those 5,000 new homes and 850,000 non-residential square feet, and it would mean that if we expected growth to pay their portion of this police facility, they would pay $90 for every new home and 4 cents per square foot for every non-residential. The city couldn't assess a number that is higher than this, and the city has that remaining almost $2 million that they need to figure out how to pay for from other tax sources. If you go to page 12, then one of the questions that often comes up is, well, if we start charging $90 per household and 4 cents for non-residential, what's that going to do to our growth? Is it going to slow our growth? And I think, as we talked about last time, there's no empirical evidence that impact fees slow growth. If you have cheap land and demand, it is most likely that that's what's going to drive your growth. But I also like to always give a comparison of what, if I'm a residential developer, for example, what would I be facing in any other community? Because if you were concerned about stifling growth, you might want to see how competitive you are. In this case, City of CUNA draft fees would be, just talking about a house, $90. City of Meridian's at $136, but they're updating their fees right now, and I would anticipate those might go up. Cost of construction going up. City of Caldwell, 97. City of Boise, 235. City of Nampa, they're currently updating theirs, but they're calculating at 359. Nampa's similar to CUNA in that they've been growing very rapidly, needing to hire these growth-related officers and running out of space, essentially. So City of Star, Middleton, Eagle are all serviced by the sheriff, and so they don't have their own. Well, Eagle does have their own. They do have their own police departments. Eagle does. Star does not.
Well, actually, so Eagle, CUNA, and Star all contract with the sheriff's office.
All contract. Okay. So in the same case, so it is possible the City of Star or the City of Eagle could assess an impact fee. They have not moved to do so yet. So that's just information. I can't make a judgment as to that information, but sometimes that's point of interest to the Impact Fee Advisory Committee. And then we do know that it's not just police fees that we're charging. Many of you were on the advisory committee when we implemented fire fees for the fire district, which encompasses the City of CUNA and the surrounding area. We also have parks fees in most of your comparable jurisdictions. So that second exhibit there shows you kind of the full impact of police, fire, and parks per jurisdiction. And you can see that, now again, Meridian's being updated. I've just heard that Caldwell's being updated. Boise will be updated next year. Nampa is, that is their draft that they're currently updating. So CUNA's actually, if you look at the comparison, second to the lowest cumulatively. One thing that does skew things is that streets fees, if you're in Ada County, everyone's paying ACHD streets fees. In Canyon County, no one's paying district fees, but the cities are starting to realize, in fact, Nampa is now proposing streets impact fees. And so I think this fully loaded burden will probably go along. It sort of looks, if you look at it, that they're all very closely related in that dollar amount. And that feels good to me because I think it shows that we're all using the same assumptions about cost. We're all using the same assumptions about the proportional share or the ratio between a person and the need for an officer or a person and the need for a fire station. So on these last two pages, there's just some overall guidance to the city that comes from the state statute about having to keep the money separate from tax funds, making sure that they meet with your committee once a year. is your job to look at the money that's come in and the money that's gone out, make sure that it's in alignment with what was presented in this study. If you got to the point as a committee where you felt growth had either really slowed down or was exceeding what we projected, you might want to ask for an update at that time. Credits, reimbursements, if a developer, for example, donated land for the police precinct and that cost was included in that $480,000, they would get a credit for their impact fees.
Is it proportional?
One for one. Mm-hmm. So what questions do you have? Jen, I know you're tag teaming here in this, so...
So essentially, we're looking for 23 officers in addition to the 17 we have.
It would need
11 for the service level and then an additional
right.
12 for
12.
Proposed growth.
Yes, in order to not only keep your level of service but increase it to one, it's 23 officers.
Okay.
So the next question I ask is, well, we don't want to start collecting fees if you're not going to be able to fund it. But the chief and the mayor and the council have talked about this and have made a strategic commitment to doing that, understanding that what they hear from their community is that safety is, you know, one of the top priorities and that they need to keep up with it. The longer you go without adding those officers, the farther behind you get.
So the city of Kuna has committed to, did you say $1 million or... earlier.
They've committed to, well, every officer costs about $150,000 totally loaded, if we talk about all their benefits and everything.
Yeah.
So they're committed to adding probably two a year over the next 10 years. Chief, is that it?
Yeah, that's correct. In fact, right now they're in the middle, in the final stages. The last year and a half they've been re-implementing their comprehensive plan. And so part of that plan will be that goal. Probably commitment's a little bit of a might be a little bit strong. They want to have that commitment. It is a goal, but it does depend on funding, and honestly, just the taxes that come in. The increases of two officers last year and this year in the budget year, it did take last year. It took just the two officers alone took everything they could take as far as foregone and the current. Tax increases that the state legislature allows. It took all that, plus they had to dip into a little bit of savings to just pay for the two. And this year, taking that same amount, they were able to pay for our full fees for our two deputies, actually two detectives this year, and had a little bit left over to disperse between the department heads. So I think it just depends on the year and how taxes are going and, you know, if we're in a recession or not. But they would like to tie to that one per 1,000. And I think that I'd love to have that commitment because the state average is 1.6 officers per 1,000 in the state of Idaho. So we feel like if we could get up to around one or at least have that goal, that we can grow as what Ann was saying. Our calls are getting way more complex. There's a lot more suicidal subject calls that take a lot longer. The calls nowadays, to do them right, it's just taking a lot more time than when I came on 25 years ago.
And to that point, I think that he raises a really important question. When we ask the question, does growth pay its own way? There's two sides to the question. One is, does it pay its own way in the capital that's needed, the fire station, the police station, the roadways? Two is, does it pay its own way in operations, the staffing, the electricity, the gas? We can't go collect money for a facility if we're not going to be able to pay for the operations side. So I always do sort of a check with the administration. I mean, certainly the council today can't bind the council 10 years from now, but if they're showing in their budgeting practices that their first commitments are to that staffing, then I feel generally confident that that's what we're moving toward. But it does, you know, that 70% growth, we're hoping that that growth is at price points that are high enough that they are contributing more than just what it costs to serve them, so that there is always a little bit more surplus in that property tax that can hire the next officer each year. That's the challenge of municipal budgeting. Good question, Jenna. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Can I
ask one more?
Mm-hmm.
I apologize.
You can ask 10. You have 10 questions.
You mentioned the school district would like to cohabitate, or maybe that's the wrong word, work together, partnership. Is that from a facility standpoint?
Ideally land. So they're looking at a parcel of land that would be shared. A facility would be available for the school district offices, the police station, and then shared space in the middle. So there'd be a way for them to share into community space, training space, et cetera. That is in its initial stages. So I didn't want to commit to that being, you know, what it is. I'm just trying to say wherever these square feet are, it might be this partnering opportunity with the school district. The committee talked about, you know, is that the right place? Should it be somewhere? Should it be leased? Any of those options.
Okay.
So, but that's the general idea, is an ongoing interest. I think they're starting to have these conceptual conversations about how they might mutually support and share space.
Okay.
And we're trying to balance that also with the a location close to Highway 69 to where we can pull in as many South officers as we can also to write reports and things like that. So the more officers that we can get that are not on the CUNA doesn't have to pay for it, but they're in town to respond to emergencies, that's just an advantage for all of our citizens.
Understood.
So that location will be critical. So I'm working with the city kind of to see if, you know, the district does have, they've offered us land in several different locations. We're just, so far, none of them have been exactly ideal for that a co-located south location. And right now, the south deputies and the sheriff, through the Board of County Commissioners, pay for 40% of our office. So we would like to continue that relationship no matter where we locate, but it needs to be, you know, someplace that's advantageous to their growth as well. So a lot of different things we're looking at.
Okay.
Well, and that's also a good point, is that as CUNA grows, it could grow into its area of impact as well. So
yes.
The farther south you grow, it may not be the county anymore. It may
yes.
be the city at
good
that
point.
Point.
Very good point.
Okay.
Do you want to revisit when somebody is buying a house here, when they pay the impact fees exactly?
Oh, good point. Okay. So impact fees are paid at the point of building permit. So the developer who has the land right now is not paying an impact fee. And when the buyer, when the builder buys it from the developer, they're not paying any fee. The builder pays the fee when they get the building permit, and it is anticipated that the builder wraps that fee into the price of the home. So it is the homeowner who is at the end of the chain paying that $90. And one of the things that we found interesting is, not as much for police, but definitely for fire, we talked about, if the level of service is low, because it's a rural area that's starting to urbanize, the amount that people are paying in property insurance is much higher than it needs to be, because there is not a fast enough response. So that by building these facilities where we can show, oh yes, we have an aerator right here, where we can show the underwriters that we can reasonably respond to crime, we can reasonably respond to a fire, the offset in the reduction in those premiums is generally proven to be greater than what was. And that $90 as well would be amortized over the term of their mortgage. So it does burden the buyer. It's the buyer who ultimately pays the fee. Unless the builder's not very good at math, I suppose. In that case, the buyer would not pay it. Did that answer your follow-up?
The valuation of the current facilities, was there an appraisal done recently? How did we come up with that 810?
What I tried to do is just use the costs that we're finding in the market right now, and unfortunately the market's changing every month. So I think for this one, about 200 or 300 a square foot.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's low. Fire stations are coming in at 450 today. But police stations are not quite as, you know, they don't have the dorms and the bays and those kind of things. So I sort of estimated something lower. I don't have another police department being built at this time, so sort of.
I would say that's low,
mm-hmm.
Quite a bit. I would say office retail. Now, Dave does have a different perspective as far as if you did have another builder. using certain construction techniques, they can build it for maybe $100 a square foot. But you've got to, you know, you've got to work with your local resources in order to achieve that that number. Office retail, a lot of times when they're going, you know, appraised value is not the same as reconstruction value.
Right.
Reconstruction value has to take into account more of the aspects of debris haul off removal, things from that point. So
testing,
the appraised value,
all of those
right, exactly. If you're going to buy this, say, retail space, you know, at $200 a square foot is probably average here in CUNA right now. But to build it, I just think that, from my perspective, it's low, and I'd kind of like to see that number increase.
Kelsey, that's such a good point, and we actually did follow up with the mayor, the chief, and the building manager, and we talked about, I think I really pushed back on this one as well, is if I had to go out and buy a police facility today, I would be paying $300 to $400 a square foot. If you built it in-house with existing labor, you have an ability to perhaps do it for less. Sort of chose to split the difference there. The mayor ultimately chose that number per square foot, saying that's the number he was going to stand behind, knowing that could be a little less if they did it in-house. It could be more if they had to contract out. We have quite a long string of that conversation. Mm-hmm. I certainly entertain that direction to increase that. I think what I'm choosing to do with my other clients right now is to try and find some reasonable number and know that in my communities that are growing so quickly, we'll need to revisit this more than every 5 years. You also have an ability, and I can't remember if they did this in fire, but to put a cost index, an inflationary index, mm-hmm. in the ordinance so that at least every year, if you're not, you know, reviewing it, you're keeping up with the construction index because that will be what's driving that cost.
Right, right. And we do that with insurance. So 8%, you know, on commercial, maybe 6% more recently with residential.
Would that be something that all three of you would like to see included in the adopting ordinance, is that sort of an inflationary index?
Yes.
Okay. And let the record show that all three members present would support that language in the legal documentation. Other questions or comments?
One comment. One of the members can't be here, Dave. I thought we, in this update proposal, struck a balance between residential and non-residential. There was a concern on businesses coming in and being able to, you know, put up a large manufacturing facility, employ 100 people, and as such, in some of the other impact fee committees, there was the ability to maybe waive or reduce the burden on the non-residential. I think in this particular case, where it's the margins are much smaller, I personally don't think it's necessary to alleviate the burden from them from this perspective. I do encourage, you know, others to kind of, you know, If they feel strongly about being able to have the ability to waive or decrease that burden on those commercial developers, to, you know, address that now versus getting it, letting it kind of just sit.
Excellent point, because we did talk about that and talked about perhaps even putting those criteria in the legal documentation. Ultimately, the city's attorney said that wasn't something that he felt comfortable doing in the ordinance, but the cities do have the ability, if there were this absolutely in every case beneficial to everyone in CUNA development, it would be jobs, it would be, it meant all of your comprehensive plan goals, the city always has the ability to pay the fees on the part of another development in order to provide that incentive. Idaho's economic development funding law is a little complicated, but certainly if that opportunity were to come about, cities do have that flexibility. And I think it's important that we do offer that opportunity to the development community to come to the city and say, this is a different type of development. You'll see in the last couple of pages in the state statute, any developer can come to the city and ask for an individualized assessment. For example, if someone were building a facility that was completely, had their complete 24/7 security staff, they might have a good argument for saying, we don't need your officers. Mm-hmm. You know, we won't even let you in if you that they would be able to have that sort of argument. So there's quite a bit of latitude for these kind of one-offs or these really unique situations to be able to work with the city. Ultimately, the city wants to be able to pay for the capital to provide the level of service. And if it's offset by other benefits to the community, those conversations can occur. Excellent point. Other ideas, comments, questions? Philosophical thoughts?
No, just the calculation on the growth. So it's increased in the last year quite a bit.
Yes.
Is it still? It still seems conservative. All right.
I think in FIRE when we originally met, I had about a 5% annual growth, and we ended up pushing it up to 7% based on what I saw being permitted.
Okay.
But when Compass came out with their new numbers a couple months ago,
yeah,
they were showing the 7%. So I think 7 could be conservative, but because the fee does come out so low, overestimating growth at this point, if we don't hit that amount of growth, could leave us short. So I think it was a little conservative. It's the same thing as picking those costs,
mm-hmm,
not wanting to go too liberal or too conservative, kind of picking a point in the middle, knowing that it is unlikely we will wait 5 years to update this, that your community is changing so quickly that it'll need more oversight on your part. And those are the pieces. What is the growth reality? What are the cost reality? And as members of this committee, your involvement in the community and the professions that you have the pulse of that. So even if you wanted to meet every 2 weeks, you could do that. And your job is to advise the city on, I think we need to go back and recalculate when you feel that, you know, you're starting to get toward that point. Certainly if you feel it's wrong now, we want to adjust it now. But if you feel like it's generally striking that balance, knowing that we need to watch it, then that would be okay. Especially for you, do you have any more questions?
I'm just looking at the numbers right here, as well as finding that, like you communicated, that balance. You don't want to overshoot, but undershoot.
Sort of guessing.
Who
knew that concrete could become so expensive?
Right. So as far as the non-residential and square feet, is that the current, or you're looking at proposed non-residential?
So non-residential is hard to, Compass does not give us, Compass is the metropolitan demographic organization. They don't give us growth projections. They do jobs, they do houses, they do people. If I have a community that has no information, I use a formula of between 100 and 400 square feet per house, knowing that retail follows residential. CUNA is unique in that it borders Meridian so closely that if you are developing a large, a Target, for example, would you put it in CUNA? Would you put it on the border? knowing that a lot of people who live in CUNA may be coming down the freeway. So there have been, I think, very reasonable concerns that that non-residential in CUNA is not growing as fast as it might be or have been in other communities. It may take a little bit longer. But I do notice, especially, you know, over the last couple of years coming into town, seeing particularly those big four corners with the DMB supply. So I think the 850,000 is a pretty conservative number. If I add up, you know, four DMB supplies, I get there pretty quickly. But I did not go as high as I might be doing in Nampa, for example, right now, because Dave, I think, gave us a really good check on whether CUNA is the same as other communities farther off the freeway, has to compete with Meridian. So that 850,000 is a formula that's following the relationship and comparing to other communities, but probably staying more conservative or a slower growth in non-residential than other communities might find. You know, Nampa's split between residential and non-residential was 92-8 about 8 years ago. So it wasn't until the gateway was built on the freeway and then the hospital was built that all of a sudden now we're kind of like an 85-15. So it's not, I'm not at all surprised that CUNA has the split that they have right now. And I would say we'll start to see it turn in 5 years probably. I mean, you clearly cannot build this many homes without some supporting non-residential. You at least have to have the insurance office,
right.
The dentist, and the bank, right? And the C-store.
Right.
You have
pretty
the
much.
Gas. There you go.
Yep.
So.
We talked about impact fees and what they could be used for, and one of the things we brought up at the last meeting was vehicles. And there is, in the report, it does kind of go over that these vehicles have to be usable for 10 years, or right? And you were saying, Chief, that on average, these vehicles, you turn them over every 3 years or 5 years?
So patrol-rated vehicles that run code 3 and are capable for pursuits and things like that, we run them for 5 years. And they have the equivalent amount of hours, sometimes sitting on accident scenes and things like that. The average with some of our dog cars run all the time to keep the dog warm or cool.
Right.
And so our average amount of hours converted to miles is about 400,000 by the time they hit that five-year mark. So we're ready to turn them over to something like a transport team or something else that does not run code 3. And then our detective vehicles, they run for 8 years before we turn them over. And we have a shop with a total of 6 employees, and they've done a lot of calculations and studying data. And about that 8-year mark, the amount we spend on maintenance and repair is just the return on our money actually is not there.
And that's an industry standard. I have one client in all the clients I've ever had that keep their vehicles longer than 10 years, and that's just a policy decision they've made to put more money into maintenance. Sometimes it's a community wanting to look prudent, so you know they're not coming out with fancy new cars, even though the financial person would know that actually replacing the cars every 3 to 5 years is the more cost-effective way to do it. So that NAMP is the only client I have that keeps their cars for 10 years. So don't expect an officer in NAMP because their car is going to break down. I didn't just say that. But yes, yeah, so police usually only has a facility that's eligible. Sometimes some communities use impact fees for weaponry or communications equipment, if again they can be shown to last 10 years. But the sheriff's office and in the valley, communications is often a shared cost or a lot of grant funded. So if it's grant funded, that's part of the statute. Is I need to look at other funding sources. So if I know that's happening, and weaponry usually doesn't last that long.
Yeah, technology on our radios that are 5,000 to 6,000 now. We just placed a $1.3 million order for 1/3 of the amount of radios we need. But Yeah, it's changing so fast. I think about every 8 years we're replacing radios because they go on a whole different band. And the next most expensive thing we have, the tasers again, are also on about a 6 to 7, 8 year cycle. And even our duty weapons, we're replacing those in 2 weeks. And I think I had that weapon for nine years. So it's hard to hit that versus fire. It's really hard for police to hit that 10-year mark.
So that, I mean, is obviously a good question. Did the legislature consider all these ins and outs when they wrote the statute? Unlikely. Do we qualify? What is an operational expense and what is capital? Government accounting standards say 10 years or over $5,000. So you can use any metric you want, generally just to be safe on the side of keeping my never been sued kind of thing. I try not to push it on those items because they're really not that money's not going to make that much difference. So it is uncommon to see vehicles.
May I ask a question? Mm-hmm. So when we're comparing it to Nampa under your draft impact fee comparison for police, so the city of Nampa, they came up with a figure that's within $1 of being four times as much as what our figure was.
Yes.
What were some major factors that made them that much more than us?
Well, remember, there are a couple different factors that factor into the math that we learned in third grade, which is the numerator and the denominator. So
yes.
The numerator is the cost. And the denominator is who's coming. So in Nampa, the numerator is the amount they picked per square foot is very high. I mean, they currently have the public safety complex and want to build to that standard. The $250 per square foot that we put in for you is sort of balancing between maybe we do the work in-house.
Gotcha.
You know, maybe it's not designed by a firm in Atlanta. You know, the difference in community. And then that denominator, who's coming, NEMP is not growing as quickly as CUNA is growing. So by having smaller amount of units to divide it by, the fee is higher proportionately.
Gotcha.
And that sometimes I'm like, oh, this doesn't make sense. And then I realize it's the math. And the things that we think will make sense. Theirs is on the high end. And the Nampa mayor has actually committed to say, we're growing, we need this, I can't wait till there's more growth, we want these officers, we value safety. So she's kind of taken it to the streets, and the committee has approved it. So it is a high number. And I wouldn't be surprised, it'll be interesting to see what the city of Boise does, because they have been talking about two other precincts for growth for 10 years, and missed their chance to be included in the recent bond. So they obviously are the next iteration of major capital improvements from the city, and they don't have a growth rate that's as high as yours. So I can really see that fee going up if they ever decide there is no more capacity at Marksville. So they will have to build something in order to keep their level of service consistent. To keep beating the sheriff's office, they will have to build something. See, that's what's always hard is that these are changing, and the assumptions on which they're based are different. So I always say, this is a good snapshot. I always put for discussion purposes only, because it's not ever apples to apples comparisons. What I like to see is, if you were a community that was really hurting for growth, would your fees be so much more than the neighboring community's fees that no one would ever choose you? That's kind of the worst case here. I don't see evidence of that. You're the fastest growing community outside of Eagle, clearly have demand, and you're actually still on the low end of those comparisons.
Hypothetically, say in 3 years we do another, how are you guys come out doing another assessment of what the needs are for the city and the community. At that point, they could say, you know what, $90 per new residential household isn't quite enough, and as such, you know, we can just have a discussion about changing that number, right?
It would have to be changed based on, you can't change the number without doing that division.
Right,
so
right.
What you would either say is growth is different and or the costs are different and or the strategy is different. So right now we've left quite a lot of wiggle room for the chief and the city to get more concrete on what the station, where will it be, what will it look like, who are we sharing with. I've just said only the amount that's for the growth-related officers can come from impact fees. In 3 years, I would expect them to have a much clearer strategy, and maybe, you know, maybe they're talking bonding, maybe they're talking something else to make up the difference. So at that time, definitely, you would want to revisit it. You know, we're hoping that this $90 would at least keep some money being put aside until there's more clarity, either growth is different, costs are different, or there's a strategy that's different. So, yeah. I would say within the next 2 to 3 years, you'll have enough different information that you'll want to update it. And if those costs are increasing, but your growth goes even higher, it's still going to be $90 because you're increasing both sides of it.
Mm-hmm.
That's the thing that I think people get confused about, is they think we should raise our fees because there's more growth. First of all, you can't just pick an arbitrary number for an impact fee. It has to be the result of this math. And two, the fastest growing communities sometimes have lower fees because they're spreading them out by more people. It's the communities that have the need, have the same expense as everybody else, but haven't quite met that order of magnitude. Middleton, for example, right next to Star. Star has so much growth, they're going to build two stations. Middleton has the highest fee because even though they're growing, they're not growing quite as much as Star or Eagle. 5 years from now, you know, it's going to make a lot more sense. But today, I can't calculate it that way. So it's timing. Timing and a crystal ball, I guess. This is not actually a science.
Can you list for us the next steps?
Excellent. So the next steps would be if the three of you are able to give your advisory opinion, which would essentially be based on this report. We agree with the report as it's written. We would advise the City Council and Mayor to adopt these fees. Or we think this one part needs to be something else. Or we think you need to make sure you add in the inflationary index. Those could be part of your opinion. Then that would go to a briefing that I'd have with Mayor and Council. If Mayor and Council said, yep, this looks fine, let's keep going, then there's a hearing with Planning and Zoning because they need to adopt the CIP into the comp plan. And once they've done that, then there's a fee hearing with the City Council so that there's an open public conversation about the fees. So that would be the process. And then if they approved it at the close of the public hearing, once the ordinance was adopted, it would come into effect 30 days. So if you said yes today, it would be probably February before they came to that.
I just see the building going around and just that many more permits going without fees attached. And so that much more money is going out the door in my mind right now because
that
I know how
correct.
Fast that could turn and I know how fast Corey is building.
Quickly. Yes. I think that also can be part of your advisory committee. Your advice is we are having permits every day. We advise the P&Z and council to quickly schedule, especially coming up on the holidays. Sometimes that can mess up public hearings. So maybe your advice is we advise you to get going as soon as possible so that we can have these done by the end of the year. You can advise them to do whatever you want. I mean, we have to do two in fee hearings and in comp plan amendments. Those are two public actions that take the most noticing. So there's a 2-week notice for each of those hearings. So that there's just a period of time it's going to take. But if you suggested urgency, that would be something to pass along to them.
Winter only slows them so much.
That's true. Sure. You can keep building in a lot of events, can't you?
Can I dumb it down just for a second?
Please do.
Because I'm looking at this, and the 5,000, once again, where did you get the net growth of 5,000 in an 11-year, 5,000 residential units in an 11-year time?
So Compass will tell me the projected population growth, and they will also tell me the projected household growth. Now, the household growth is just a function of a division of 3.2 people.
Right. So I understand that part, but you even just communicated in 10 years, you're saying there's only going to be 5,000?
That's just CUNA city limits.
CUNA
that's
city
not
limits. Okay.
Building in a county over by.
Right.
So okay.
It's just in the CUNA city limits. We're not even including the area of impact. So what I have to, I think when we included the city limits and the fire district, which is much larger, we had 7,000.
Mm-hmm.
So the 5,000 is not only what Compass is telling me. It's not only taking that population and dividing it by 3.2, it's also then looking, I have actual building permit data from the city of CUNA that says how many residential permits have been pulled every year.
Okay.
And I'm feeling like 500 will cover us until you see more or less. I mean, because, yeah, I guess you could hit another bubble tomorrow. I think we learned we don't know anything from the last 10 years. So it is some, it's a bit of an art.
Yeah, so with regard to CVH building everywhere, if he just goes a street over and he's outside, he's not impacted all these building permits?
That is correct. That would be in the county. And heretofore, the county mm-hmm. Has not adopted impact fees. However, because so much of the growth is occurring in unincorporated county.
And it's impacting our police.
And it impacts everyone, right. I mean, you're on a call one place instead of another. There may be some good news on that front in that I have about 15 fire districts right now that are going to both Ada and Canyon County saying, we can't collect impact fees because we don't have building permit authority, but if you don't give us impact fees, then our level of service is going to go. So that's what we did with CUNA, and CUNA City is already collecting fees for the district within the city. We've already met within the county commission, and it looks positive that they will adopt them in the next couple of months as well. So if the county were to set a precedent that, yes, fire, they will collect impact fees for building in the unincorporated area for fire districts, it would follow that at some point mm-hmm. the county commissioners might say, well, hey, our sheriff's department is far less funded than, which is, some makes sense. I mean, a rural level of service for sheriff is not the same as an urban. But as Ada County becomes so much more urbanized and there is not that much rural left, what is the level of service that their constituents expect? How do we fund mm-hmm. it? So in my 20-year look back at how this all works, it's 10 years of that will never happen. It's communism to okay, well, I'll do it for you, but we're not doing it here, too. How come we never got on this bandwagon? The chief and I talked about that. I said, is it time to bring the sheriff into this conversation? And the sheriff's not quite ready. This will be the first community that's contracted, that contracts services from the sheriff who will be adopting fees for a sheriff contracted force. But I could see Star Eagle being next week. Everyone's watching you, I think. You're the trendsetters in China.
It's
always been
it's just so bad because you see
some FHD legislation, too, and so we need to get on them for this.
Because we could be funded so much
Absolutely.
Better.
That's why it makes sense.
From a street over.
Oops, you're right.
There.
And, a lot of that is the assumption that if you're growing quickly, you obviously have tons of extra property tax, and all of the residents, I mean, whether you lived here forever or I build a home and move out to CUNA, we're all paying property tax.
Correct.
The myth about that is that all new growth creates a surplus of property tax. And generally, if a home is not at least $250,000 to $300,000, it's costing more to send officers out to than it is. So we're not actually making a lot extra, and that's why we kind of look at, there's always going to be a portion of capital that property taxpayers have to pay. Do you want to pay for my new home? Or do you just want to pay for the ongoing service that you've been receiving or this increased level of service? So that is exactly where that balance is, and it's it takes a long time to change ideology. And I think where we see it changing, where I'm seeing it in my advisory committees, is one, people in the committees who are long-time residents, even if they're also builders or developers in the community, but don't want to subsidize growth, and also are not, at this point in time, not worried that the building community is not making the market profit. In a recession, obviously, I think people might be more concerned about what someone's feeding. Although, development costs are development costs.
I think you hit it on the head, is we're subsidizing growth outside of unincorporated, or CUNA city limits, so.
And it's impacting the success of what they can accomplish.
Yeah.
Especially in this, by contracting, I worked for Boise Police for a while, I've done studies on whether you do it in-house or contracting, and the model that, that CUNA and Southern Eagle are bringing to use is it's still more cost-effective to contract by the county. But the sheriff's level of service and an expected urban level of service start to be like this. So the city then has to choose to pay more to the county for more officers than people in the county want to pay, because they don't, you know, the idea is, I don't care if it takes you 5 hours to respond to me. I chose to live out here. I don't want to be bothered by that. Whereas if you start building a bunch of townhomes, people who just left, you know, Meridian, who want to kind of live in a rural area, but also expect some response in 20 minutes, Kim is just in this real great growing pain place of figuring out what do our constituents want, where is it most appropriate for that, who's most appropriate to serve. And yes, the more boundaries you put on a map, the more complicated and unfair it becomes. So we could not fix this all at one time. But we are making incremental steps.
What about, and this is kind of the sidetrack here, but impact fees for roadways, transportation, would that give Ada County, if Ada County was to adopt that, then as such it makes sense to stop subsidizing unincorporated CUNA, right? Because it's an impact fee on it.
If you build in CUNA or outside of CUNA, you're paying ACHD fees. They're exactly the same for every. There's no city in Ada County that builds their own roads.
Right.
So I think streets, ACHD covers the cost of the roadways, at least to the level it chooses to. It may not be making road pay as much of its share as other people might think, but that is a other Pandora's box.
Okay.
And are we unique here in Ada County that are we one of the only counties that doesn't have any cities with their own highway districts?
Yeah.
Which makes Ada more of a challenge when you go to the legislature, right? Because we're so unique.
Right.
Yes.
So it's a philosophical model. But certainly, having a countywide district makes some sense, but having different municipalities, it has its own complications. Now, on the other side, in Canyon County, there are a lot of districts that are terribly underfunded and nothing's getting built. In Ada County, at least, there's a lot of lane miles being built and growth is paying a proportional share. In Canyon County, there are cities that have streets departments. So Nampa has the Nampa Streets Department. They also have the Nampa Rural Highway District. But Nampa's really stepped up and they're making philosophical change to, we're going to have growth the other way. We're not going to subsidize any growth-related roadways anymore. We're really going to rely on federal grants, and Nampa's really, really good at getting those. But they're, in the next couple weeks, going to face probably a contentious open house, as we say. Yeah, actually, instead of just letting you widen just the sidewalk in front of your parcel, we're going to also have you pay for your proportional share of that intersection down there and the lane mile over here. Oddly enough, all the developers on that committee have agreed.
some point, you need to have infrastructure to market your homes. So I think there's a general understanding in the development community that if it's done fairly and properly and follows the statute and is transparent, that we see less resistance. I always see less resistance in the recession as well, for example. But unfortunately, if you wait till the boom, you just lost the whole bunch.
Right, absolutely.
My biggest concern with the, and I am cognizant, thank you for dumbing it down for me, how you got to the 5,000 net growth, but my biggest concern, like we just said, is predominantly the growth is happening outside city limits, and so this 5,000 net growth is supposed to cover the increase of officers that will be responding to homes outside city limits.
Mm-hmm. They say this is the level of service we want. So it might be the same deputy that's covering just outside of the area of impact as in the city, but I'm assuming in your contract there's a level of service expectations for call response, etc., which is why if you want to start hiring more officers, you, the city of CUNA, you're going to have to pay Ada County Sheriff more money to do that, correct?
Correct, yes. So right now, we do have a shared services credit, so we track with our data how often, because unless it's an emergency or a code 2 that there's some safety, like an accident that's occurred, but we're not sure if we have injuries, but it's blocking lanes and it's stopping commerce and things like that. So we will go to some of those code 2 calls, but all the code 3 calls, of course, no matter who's closest, no matter where they work, whether it's Meridian or ISP or the county or the city of CUNA, you want a police officer there as quick as possible, so that's who is going to respond. And all of our cars now have GPS built in, so even dispatch knows who's the closest, and you just get assigned. And so as we track the shared services, we if our bill is to the city $1 million, and it's about double that, but for simple math, if it's about $1 million, we credit them a 7% right now. So the sheriff it gives them back that $70,000. Less, and that's because as they track how often we go outside of city limits versus the sheriff's deputies come in, they've kind of came up with that. We used to change that shared services amount every year. It's been set at 7% now for the last couple years. It was really confusing. As much as councils turn over, it became harder than it was. I think it caused more problems than it did trying to track, and data is always a challenge as well. So
okay. Okay.
People in the county, by telling the county commissioners they don't want an increase to their taxes, they're probably saying, we're choosing the TIN plan. That's the plan. We don't want to stand for something like that. To really make it the simplest system.
And
you're totally right. It doesn't really make a lot of sense. And it's not the best way to go about it. But given all of the jurisdictions, territorial politics,
okay.
And
okay.
I think the sheriff is obviously a huge proponent of contracts, and if you look at the three cities that did choose to contract versus the cities that choose to have their own police department, the costs were about 30% less than Meridian, which is the next lowest. Boise City is almost 2.5 to 3 times as much, and Garden City is about 5 times as much as the per resident cost for police services. So because the sheriff's office, we're now with what the county commissioners just gave the sheriff and the three contracts growing, we're at 744 people now at the sheriff's office, and which provides us quite a bit of efficiencies built in, everything from shops to detectives to crime lab to property to the training. The list just goes on and on and on.
Okay.
Okay.
Well said. Well said. I like that.
Thank you for explaining that.
I concur with Kara on trying to get the council to look at this sooner than later and maybe try to vote on that sooner than later. Mm-hmm. I think as such, we're missing out every day, especially with the amount that we're collecting. I think that it's, I see more services being used by law enforcement sometimes than the fire department. And as such, I think it's really an important step in moving forward and getting this in place sooner than later.
And I think we need to add in that we need to review it either probably annually at this point.
Mm-hmm.
I concur with that. Just good examples of school district or this growth. They talk about, well, 10 years ago we had this plan. Well, yeah, that worked well.
Right.
Look where we're at. That yeah. worked really well for everybody. Because we don't have a crystal ball. So I think being proactive, and I agree, capitalizing on what's being presented to us right now. We have all these building permits coming. We might as well.
They had done quite a lot of demographic analysis, and what I like to do is try to make sure that our projections are in alignment. You know, we're looking at the city's strategic plan and other, so it is the science of finding what the projections are, but I think you have a key of looking at it annually.
Well, she started it. She gets the credit. Right.
You're the oversight committee, but given the condition you're in, I would say you may ask the city to provide to you annually a building permit report. If I were you, I would say that some of the number of residential units and the number of non-residential square feet, the building department only collects evaluation data, which does nothing for this. So,
yeah.
I would suggest you ask them for square footage added.
That would, yeah, because because right now we're only doing the 4 cents.
That's right.
And if it goes up.
And we're taking what Compass, the report the Compass.
Right. So asking for more detailed information. Right.
I mean, that was really in reference, I think, today. He was on the committee who was saying he does not see non-residential moving very quickly. And that's why we have you on the committee, is to give us an industry perspective.
Mm-hmm.
But we probably just need to keep checking, because if you wait too long,
maybe not this year, but next year,
right.
Or
right.
Within the span of a year.
Exactly. So I'm going to write down annual meetings, specific building permit data, including for coverage. And what I will actually do is you can make a motion. I will write a memo that will attach with the minutes and send it out to you before we submit it, so that I will have an actual memo from you that clarifies some of these.
Okay.
So can we put in there as well, like, to reevaluate the $200 per square foot if they haven't built anything in the next year to see where building costs are?
Well, I mean, no, totally, and you should. I mean, I would say at your meeting, you're evaluating everything.
Right,
and
the whole package.
So, you don't need to hire an outside consultant to do that every year. Some cities do because they just don't want to have to deal with it, but it is. Planning and building are perfectly capable of providing.
Giving that data. I mean, even Dave could
actually,
probably get the data.
You'll be the fire committee as well. We'll do this all at one time.
So
I would not be surprised if, and sometimes we'll just help the client out by just helping explain the data. So we look at the data again and say, oh, she's amazing. She's totally right on. Or, she needs some things in person. It does not mean she's right? So, I think maybe what you're saying is because CUNA's growing so quickly and all of the other variables are changing so quickly that at your annual review, and you can choose to even call it in 6 months if something happens, but at no less than your annual review, you want a complete review of all of the data assumptions.
Yes.
Yeah, that seems reasonable to me at this point in time.
With the year review.
For
with all the
so
data.
I'm going to go through these 5 points.
Okay, sorry. Okay.
Is the math okay?
Yes, the math is reasonable.
I agree.
Anonymous math is okay. So what I am hearing is that you will call a question for a vote to recommend to the council that the City of CUNA Police Department Impact Fee Study and Capital Improvement Plan be adopted as presented. The City Council take up the issue as soon as possible, the desired adoption date at the end of the calendar year. The committee intends to review the entire report annually. In addition to reviewing all financial information as required by law, we would like to be provided with updated information included in the impact fee calculation, including construction costs, recent and projected growth. Specifically, this report should include building permit data to cover number of new residential building permits and the number of new non-residential square footage that has been permitted. Is this a correct understanding in your direction?
Yes, I would make the recommendation for the council to review these.
Yes.
All of you who approve that motion as stated, beautifully done.
Yes.
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 Unanimously, yes. I want to thank you very much for your service. This is a terribly important role that can be a little boring and a little complicated both at the same time. And it's not an exact science because the variables are moving so quickly. But I think CUNA and the CUNA Fire just good group here who understands the issues and are going to continue over the next year to see realities in your community that you will know, oh, that's going to affect this. And you'll be able to bring that information. You'll be able to communicate that to me or to the chief or to the fire chief throughout the year saying, keep a reminder of this. This is something we want to look at. So that we gather all that information and can remain as current as possible.
Thanks for your patience with me.
No, you were right up with it. And I will nominally have you just review that draft memo before we submit it. We'll give you a copy of the minutes as well. You'll be invited to that council briefing because I think the city council and mayor are most interested in hearing from you yourself. From you yourself.
The draft report was well written, you explained everything to me, I can see a way forward for the Sheriff's Department and the City of CUNA and the residents to, you know, build together on this. So,
thank you.
Back to whomever.
Yeah, we're, yeah.